Previously on Super Dumb Games.
Major Nelson, we have reports of the enemy breaching the perimeter.
God damn it. I want all our fire concentrated on that position. How many are there?
Just two, sir.
Two, you say? There's only one podcast brave enough to take us head on. Super Dumb Games.
Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb?
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
Jeez, sounds like Major Nelson is pissed, huh?
Yeah, he was pissed about the X-Bone. He's pissed about this show. I'm worried that we've gotten on the wrong side of one of the most powerful men in gaming.
You know what? I come from the Tom Petty school of take no guff. I'm not backing down. I'm going to stand my ground because this is some bullshit. If Major Nelson is going to fire shots over our bow, you know what? I'm taking him head on, just like he thought we were going to do, because we actually weren't going to do that. But now, I think this is personal. I think we're going to have to go after this fucker.
Yeah, he's a dangerous man. He unboxes consoles.
Who is he again?
He's a really peculiar part of game culture because there's no equivalent among, you know, Sony or Nintendo.
Right.
He's kind of like, if you remember back in the Nintendo Power days, Howard.
Yeah.
He's kind of that guy. Like, he's the quirky, you know, his name's Major Nelson. He doesn't wear a bow tie.
Right.
He looks like an appliance salesman. But his whole thing is to be the champion of all things Xbox. He's kind of the mouthpiece, in a way, the face. The thing is, he has no personality.
Right. That's what I gather from this. And I imagine he only attracts minions who also have equal amounts of 0.0 personality.
I don't know that he has any fans. He just has people who are tolerant.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Super Dumb Games.
Yeah!
Yeah! Whoa!
Whoa!
I am one of your hosts, Chris.
And I am Tanner.
And we are here to bring you the best of the very worst, the most stupendous Super Dumb Games ever created. Last week, if you recall, we brought you Dark Forces, as well as some very clever news segments. This week, we have on tap a few really dumb games, one for the PlayStation 1, correct? Gex? Is that for PS1?
You know, so my knowledge of Gex is scant at best.
Yeah, I'm asking you because you seem to be the professional Gex player based on your playthrough, and you seem to be also the well of knowledge that I should drink from when it comes to Gex. You had all the answers.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I have all the answers, but all the answers are wrong about Gex. Not only did I not realize that I wasn't playing the sequel to Gex, Gex Under the Gecko, but even when I found out I was playing Gex, I only learned this morning that Gex originally came out on the 3DO.
Oh yeah, it did.
It was kind of like 3DO's Mario title, in a way, and it came out in 94 and then was later ported to PlayStation, Sega Saturn, and Windows.
Man, you know, the 3DO, I remember my brother and I going to the local mom and pop game store, putting down a $100 deposit and taking home a 3DO for a rental over the weekend.
Yeah, because you sure as hell weren't buying it.
No.
I remember that thing, it felt like the equivalent of purchasing a car.
Mm-hmm.
It was so expensive.
Yeah, it was way outside of my 14-year-old price point. So there was no way I was going to get that. But that and Sega CD, I remember doing the same thing with because it was so new. There was something about discs versus carts.
Yeah, but they couldn't quite perfect it.
Yeah.
So Gex is a platformer. Its big thing is to sort of satirize pop culture, and it has Dana Gould, a comedian, doing the voice, and he's supposed to be a real snarky character. The thing I didn't know was how bizarre the backstory is. So I was looking it up on Wikipedia, and listen to this. If you watch my playthrough, basically you're a lizard sitting on a couch, and then you get sucked into television, and shit just pops off. That's about all you get. But there's actually this sophisticated psychodrama happening, I guess. So Gex and his family lived in Maui, Hawaii. His mother raised him and his three younger siblings while their father worked for NASA. Gex's hobbies included spending time with his friends, surfing, playing the ukulele, hipster, throwing poi parties. One day, Gex's mother got a phone call from NASA explaining that Gex's father and two human volunteers died when their rocket exploded on the launch pad.
Holy shit. This just got heavy for a gecko.
Yeah, reportedly due to some Band-Aid in the fuel tank.
Oh.
So they this super heavy thing, and they're like, hey, it's a fucking Band-Aid in the fuel tank. Soon, the Gecko family's carefree life was shattered when Gex bottled up his emotions and took refuge in front of the television.
Oh, my God.
He became obsessed. 3 weeks later, he was an addict. After several unsuccessful attempts to get Gex to stop watching TV and consulting with a minister and friends at work, Gex's mother decided it was time for a change. The Gex family moved to Encino, California, shout out. Gex's TV was taken away and he fled from home. After several months of living on the streets, Gex inherited an enormous amount of money and moved back to Maui to live in a mansion.
What the fuck?
And bought the world's largest TV. This could be bullshit, but I think this is legitimate.
Are you sure this isn't fan fiction? Somebody just filling in the gaps?
I mean, this is on Wikipedia. The level of detail, but not crazy detail, I think. I don't know. People, for the millions of listeners out there, if you have any idea where this is coming from, like if this was a comic or something, I am dying to read it.
An explosion of that magnitude would have been a national tragedy, not just a family tragedy.
Yeah.
So this would have affected the entire nation. Gex would have been watching that television and seeing video clips of his dad exploding.
Yeah, it was like they're parodying the Challenger explosion.
Yeah, so... I mean, I find the Challenger explosion really funny. I've always found it quite humorous.
One of the standout hilarious moments of the 80s, along with...
Like, when the Berlin Wall came down, that actually wasn't as funny as when it went up. I thought when it went up, it was hilarious.
Yeah. So the thing is, Gex is not the most spectacular platformer.
Are you sure?
It feels a bit like you're controlling a remote control sailboat or kind of like guiding a marionette through a car wash. Okay. It's like it just isn't responsive and shit is going on everywhere.
Well, you were drinking, number one, so that's
that
influenced your ability.
That was involved.
So there's that. But then I did notice you did have some difficulties with switching between like the tail stomp that would smash through blocks. And then some of the jumps felt like they were going a bit too short, as well as there was one point where you were able to switch between climbing profile to us to then suddenly being splayed on the screen, like you were climbing up the fence or something in the background.
Yeah, they decided to throw in a lot of mechanics and variety, you know, seemingly to distinguish it.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, they throw in all of these references and enemies, and it's just... You start to realize that what makes a platformer great is a level of purity to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels as well like games didn't get funny until really late in the game. It was very hard to make a game legitimately funny in the 80s and 90s, I think.
The first games I can think of off the top of my head that would try to be funny would have been games that were somehow tied into an already funny product. For instance, a Simpsons game would try to win you over, but usually it was via references that you already knew, already established references within the world of, you know, again, if we use the Simpsons as an example, I guess you would laugh at the fact that Bart said, "I'm Bart Simpson, who the hell are you?" And then you would laugh about it.
Yeah, it was more about the illusion.
Right.
Than the joke. Although I think, you know, the Monkey Island games, Tim Schafer's stuff, I wouldn't say that, and maybe I was too young, I wasn't laughing out loud at it, but it had a certain style. Whereas Gex was designed by someone who thinks he's funny.
Right.
You know? I imagine it was some dude sitting in like a double-breasted suit with a mustard shirt underneath, like he just stepped off a softcore movie, and he's just listing shit over speakerphone to a group of super talented like programmers.
I want it to be a gecko, see?
Yeah, it's gotta be a lizard, and a lizard needs a watch. This is non-negotiable, Terry. It's not up for fucking debate. It needs a swatch.
But sir, I'm telling you, our market research indicates that there's children.
Fuck it. So I encourage y'all out there to watch this extreme. It was meant to be a full playthrough. It's only two videos. Spoiler alert. And I think you might be entertained by what ends up happening in that playthrough.
It's definitely worth a watch. And speaking of being unable to complete games, I'm wondering if we'll ever be able to complete a single playthrough of one of these games. I was playing Dream TV, and as you will see next week when we post the videos, it was a disaster.
Let's be clear here. On Gex, I made 5 videos. I think I got through 2 levels. You made 2 videos of 1 level.
That's right. 1 level that was confusing as shit. It had no pragmatic purpose to exist. It was...
It is an extraordinary work of game design. It is batshit crazy.
For those of you who don't know what's going on in that game, we do give a rundown in the YouTube videos, again, that will be posted next week. But it's about these 2 kids named Charlie and Jimmy. They receive a game in the mail, and when they load it up, they find themselves suddenly in the game. And this world has been designed by a sinister villain named the Critic. And then they have to fight through these different worlds. The only one I was in of the 4, because the 4 are medieval, Egyptian, prehistoric, and future. I'm pretty sure I was only in the medieval world. And during that time, I collected all of 4 or 5 of the 9 hidden puzzle pieces that are on each level.
It was sort of, in that way, I didn't think about this till after the fact, it's kind of like Braid.
It is, actually. It did have that feel to it, to be honest. Because the way you interacted with the environment, it had that feeling of...
You're retreading.
Right, and you're not necessarily in the foreground the whole time. It felt like sometimes you're behind something, even though you're not in that game. It did have that Braid feel to it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's really fascinating that it had a white character and a black character. I mean, that is exceptionally rare in that era of game.
Absolutely. And I have a feeling if there was another person here to plug in that Player 2 controller, that we might have done a little bit better, because I think that the game was intended for 2 people to play it simultaneously even. I'm not sure if you had to tap in and out. It's something I would like to try if I had any friends who would ever entertain the idea of playing this fucking game with me.
If you think about it, it's bizarre, because if you were playing with someone, you'd have to just sit there and watch them.
Right. That's what I'm wondering, though. Did you have to tap in the other person, or could you let the other person play along split screen at the same time? I don't know if that technology existed in 1994.
Yeah, that would seem pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, so this game was definitely ahead of its time, especially when you see why the split screen exists, because there's this sort of reveal where once the 2 characters are in the same level on the zone, where the screens come together, and it's actually really fluid. Not in the first playthrough, you'll notice that one just craps out on me, but in the second one, you'll see, when the 2 characters finally unite on the same part of the board, that it really comes together nicely. I was very surprised. Having said all of that, this game is super dumb. At one point, I encounter a bear. I shoot it with arrows. Turns out the secret to defeating the bear is to just carry some honey on your person and smuggle it past him. He lets you go by. But first, he hit me in the nuts several times, which killed my character. Then, you're fighting in a dungeon against some skeletons. Also, rats that kill you. Pistons that weren't even invented back in the 16th century. And then also, of course, the inevitable pitfalls that claim my life a million times. And then some juggling Luke Skywalkers who run around throwing bats at you.
It's a spectacular disaster.
It truly is.
I felt like it was, even though it got so much wrong, it got a few things right. Like jean shorts. It nailed those. Aloof Grizzlies nailed it. And the third, and perhaps most important, is child death. It nails child death. It does child death like you've never seen before.
They sort of collapse like a kid would into a pile of leaves. Just drapes himself over into death.
There's this really subtle animation you'll see. It's about a three-part animation, which for that game looks pretty spectacular, of when your child dies. And there's a patience and detail put into it that gives you this creepy feeling like a dude brushing the hair on his fuck doll. Like, it's a patience and care put into something so morbid.
So that'll be posted next week. In the meantime, Tanner, what do you have on deck next week?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I am open to suggestions, people. Right now, I'm focusing on stuff just on the PlayStation Network store or the Xbox store. So if there are particularly dumb games out there that are on either of those stores, let me know and I am down for playing them.
I did get a few suggestions. One of them was for a game that I think might actually be a good game, which was, I think, King's Quest. So I don't know if I'll be able to play that. I'll have to check it out and see if it's dumb.
It's considered a classic.
That's what I'm worried about. So I'll have to take a look at that. In the meantime, I do plan on playing a little bit of Addams Family Values for the Sega Genesis.
Yes.
Addams Family Values is not Fester's Quest. If that's what you think I'm going to be playing, it is not even close to the same. I mean, you get to see Uncle Fester and all, and he shoots some lightning bolts out of his hands, but it is not even close. So stay tuned for that. I will probably make it all of two levels through that game before I quit the fuck out of it, because it's so bad.
And I should say, you can contact us at superdumbgames@gmail.com. Is there some hot news today, people? First segment, the one that shook up the video game journalism field. What's dropping? 9/20/13. PC, there's one place you need to be. Marlowe Briggs and the Mask of Death.
What is this?
Steam release. Get on it. This is blaxploitation, y'all. A new breed of warrior returns, committed to destroying the enemies of freedom. When one angry man has a world to protect, there's only one future. His fucking own! No-nonsense hero Marlowe never shied away from danger or trouble, but now he faces his ultimate challenge. After crash-landing in Central America, he has an industrial evil to defeat, whilst bound to an ancient Mayan death mask, who's had no one to talk to for 2,000 years.
What is this, Aladdin for black people?
Another day at the office, only this time, Marlowe is, all caps, push to the limit! His sweetheart has been abducted, the bad guys are making up their own rules, and only one man can judge them and execute the sentence. They told him to go to hell, he was dead ready. I want to play this.
It sounds awesome.
I know, it sounds amazing. This is the kind of, there's so much crap coming out on Steam, and there are gems like this.
I'm looking at a screenshot right now, and it looks like he's got some kind of tribal tattoo and possibly a blade like Kratos would be wielding. Am I wrong in that?
Yeah, he seems like a mashup of Kratos, Nathan Drake, and Ving Rhames.
So what are you doing? So this game is, you're just running around levels killing who?
I don't know. I just report it.
But then, and I have so many questions to ask the press right now. Or actually the game designers, really.
I can tell you that the last feature they list is save the entire planet.
God damn, this game's scope.
It's their last selling
point. This game's scope is limitless. I want to know how deep the pockets of Who's making this game, by the way?
I couldn't find out. I think maybe because it's just kind of like a little under the radar Steam release. I don't know.
Well, looky here. I found myself on Major Nelson's website talking about Marlo Briggs and the Mask of the Death.
He scooped us!
God damn you.
That son of a bitch.
All right. Well, according to him, this game... Actually, no, he doesn't say shit about this game. He's just... He's a stooge. All he's doing is... He's like the Huffington Post for video games.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
So, a less exciting release on 924 by City Interactive for 360, PlayStation, PC is Alien Rage. This is the most generic shit I've ever heard. And on top of it, they sell it with their up-to-date graphics technology. So listen to this crap. Unleash a fury of powerful weapons as you blast your way through armies of alien forces hell-bent on taking you down. Battle through 14 intense levels and prepare to face a barrage of beastly-sized bosses that will test your every skill. Each of your 10 weapons comes with 2 firing modes, and you'll need all of them. Battle-hardened alien forces will attack you from every direction using various flanking and attack moves. Built with powerful, up-to-date graphics technology, awesome physics, destructible environments, experience a truly intense old-style shooter game.
In other words, they're giving us 1995 Atari Games Area 51 light gun arcade game that was then ported to the PlayStation and Sega Saturn.
I imagine that if we were in some future controlled by Skynet, and we were like a pacified race of Gexes who were just blindly consuming video game technology, this is the kind of game Skynet would create. This copy reads like a Mad Libs of video game bullshit. Like, oh, 10 weapons and 2 firing modes?
I don't care! There's so many new games that have been coming out, well, in the past decade, I'd say, where the big selling point is how many guns you get. And most of the time, I couldn't give a shit less about how many guns I get.
You end up using 2.
Right, because 2 of them are overpowered, imbalanced, and way better than the rest of them. The other ones are just like, why the fuck do I have this? You end up throwing them away. It's the equivalent of picking up a plate in Fallout New Vegas and keeping it in your inventory. Nobody does it.
So, we're moving on. Prepare yourselves for top sizzlers. These are the top hottest stories in gaming culture. It doesn't get much hotter this week than our top sizzler. Zooey Deschanel was a huge Legend of Zelda fan. So she appeared on Conan on September 16th, and video games websites went wild.
I already hate this story.
As she reported that back in her younger years, the early 90s, when she got a Super Nintendo, that she also got The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past and was exclusively obsessed with the game Zelda, bracket, crowd applauses, end bracket, for Super Nintendo, the greatest game ever made, is her claim. She goes on to explain, my mom would say I had like an hour or something to play. And then when she would come and tell me, I would be like, no, I'm about to get to the dark world. Listen, people, she's dropping some deep cuts.
Can we stop this worship of good-looking gals who play video games? Enough already. I'm a good-looking guy and I play video games. Nobody gives a shit about it. Where's my time on Conan so I can talk about how I just played Dream TV in my underwear? That's got to be hot to somebody, right?
I mean, it's hot. It's probably a little less hot.
What, motherfucker?
She's a master of getting hipster love.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, she knows. It's that whole bit was so cleverly concocted to kind of build up that adorableness that she's cultivated for herself.
Yeah.
So our second story, not nearly as huge as that one, comes from our friend, our primary source on Super Dub Games, Stick Skills' Douglas Vaney. Return appearance. Major Nelson, Douglas Vaney, friends of the show. Douglas Vaney dropped a huge sizzler on the chests of gaming with this headline. Turok 2 was coming to 360 and PS3. Tons of concept art leaked. Do you know Turok, Chris?
Yeah, the N64 game, you mean?
It was a piece of shit! It was terrible. I played it. I loved it.
I think every kid played it and ate it up just because of... It had some cutting-edge graphics and dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, that you could shoot in the face and, you know.
Yeah, everyone liked it. It was coming on the heels of, like, Jurassic Park 2. We were almost done with dinosaurs, but they had to milk that last little bit out of us, and they totally did.
Yeah, the news came that apparently In Secret, Propaganda Games, who I believe developed Turok, were also, in recent years, secretly developing a Turok 2, but then the studio closed. So someone on NeoGAF, which is a popular video game forum, released a bunch of concept art. It looks exactly like you'd expect. There's dinosaurs that look really beefed up. There's guns. You know, I for one am really mourning the loss of what was certainly going to be a super dumb game. It's tragic.
Wasn't Turok also a caveman who was wielding guns? Is that what it was? Or was he was a guy sent back in time to kill
there
things?
Was some kind of time trip, because it was a mashup of highly futuristic weaponry and dinosaurs. But Turok, I think, was like a caveman who somehow got connected with the future shit.
Okay.
And then just used it to basically commit genocide of dinosaurs. Wiping out some of the most magnificent creatures the Earth has ever seen.
Of course, that's what I would use my time travel capsule to do as well. There's no question. It would be...
You've got to admit, it would be pretty fun.
Sex with a Neanderthal.
Yes.
Number one on the list.
Oh, God, yeah.
God, you know how beastly that would be? Just be...
Staring into those dead brown eyes.
Which one?
All right! Moving on to our final top sizzler, and this is also a commentary on how fucking dumb video game news is. Headline. In Australian, and this comes from... I can't even read the fucking font. It looks like the kind of font I used when I was drawing Metallica on my Trapper Keeper. It's right. Stevivor. Stevivor. Headline. An Australian EB game store was offering free... quote, cocaine, end quote, with GTA 5 pre-orders last night. Which, this is total link bait. And the top picture, and this is all linked in our show notes on superdumbgames.com, so you can check it out. The top picture is basically a mirror sitting on an EB Games counter with just coke all over it. And I guess this was exposed by Reddit. Spoiler alert, it wasn't coke.
Of course it's not. How much coke was in the picture? Was it like a Tony Montana sort of level of like piles of coke that you could just dip your face into?
It's probably about a G worth of coke.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
It clearly is deployed on the mirror with a kind of abandon that someone who could afford that much coke would not do. You know, it's all over the fucking place. It's all over the counter. And then there's like this guy wearing a shirt with an owl and Reeboks on, who's all scruffy, like it's the EB Games employee just standing in front of it.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess Reddit uncovered this. This is in Australia, and it was one EB Games location. You know, probably this dude wearing the owl shirt just decided to, like, make this a promo of some kind.
Right.
The substance, let's see, this is a quote. The display included a white powdery substance that appeared to be some form of an illegal drug. We can confirm that the powdery substance was sherbet, a type of fizzy candy.
Here's the problem I have with this. Let's say that there was some kind of major release for the Blu-ray of Breaking Bad. I guarantee you people will be selling rock candy.
Oh yeah, they do.
That looks like crystal meth. Exactly. So why is this any different? That this guy is deciding to treat the release of a game that ostensibly is probably has a lot to do with drug dealing at some point in the game. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that Grand Theft Auto 5 has drugs in it at some point. I haven't played it, so I can't confirm. But this guy is simply tapping into a plot point, if anything. I guess I can understand why EB Games would be maybe like this doesn't represent the company as a whole.
Yeah, but they have to make a statement, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. It just seems silly to me. Why not embrace it? It's like Major Nelson not embracing X-Bone. Just take it in and say, whatever. Fuck you, people who have a problem with this kind of stuff. It's harmless fun. Like if Rampage comes out, right? And then I build a mock model that looks like two towers in a gigantic city, and those towers fall, and they collapse in such a way that resembles an event in history. Is that really wrong to do? Because I'm just trying to talk about Rampage, the game, where you're going to play a lizard or a King Kong and knock down a building.
Yeah, this employee, he's just an industrious employee. You know, he's probably the type of dude who at Halloween sits under a table and throws and puts his hand through a bowl of candy.
Yeah, that's a classic prank.
Last segment, not the least, ladies and gentlemen, this is hot off the fucking wire. These are stories straight from the PR Newswire. Late breaking, top news, must know information. There's none bigger than this one that has 0.0 likes on Facebook. Toys R Us announces the 2013 hashtag TRU Hot Toy List. The Toy Authority unveils the definitive list of top holiday playthings to get kids' wish lists ready, featuring uber ugly pups, a giggly monkey, unstoppable swappables, pocket pussy, a crazy obsession, and the ultimate drifting machine, among others. So, Chris, my question to you, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 items, the fabulous 15, Toys R Us claims, on this best of the holiday season top toy list. What do you think is on this toy list?
Okay, well, a serious answer, I'm going to guess Xbox One.
Bam, that's one.
Is PS4 coming out in the holidays?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'm going to guess that's on it.
No!
Oh my God!
Major Nelson, victory.
Holy shit, okay.
Xbox One is on there. Sony PlayStation, not on there. That's all Major Nelson.
Fuck. Okay, what's the age range? Because I have a niece, and she likes...
I think it's the full... So they try to... They break it down by years. They actually have a lot more than 15.
Okay.
So on the larger expanded list, PlayStation 4 is on there, but Toys R Us is throwing their hat in the ring with Xbox. But it's broken down so that the Fabulous 15 is throughout all ages, basically.
Okay, so just a guess, and this is only because I'm pretty sure it tops every Christmas list I've ever seen in the past, like, 20 years. There's got to be Elmo on there.
Yes, Elmo is on there. The latest model, which is apparently Big Hugs Elmo. I don't know. I mean, it's the same product every year with a few different animations.
Okay, I've got another guess.
Okay.
Because last episode, it was at the top of the show, the Tabio E... What is it? Tabio E2.
Yes.
With shit screen.
Yep. Fecal screen, spit guard.
Is it on the list?
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll go to the board.
Yes!
Oh!
You are 3 for 3 at this point.
Holy shit.
You are fucking on fire. I didn't even think you'd get one.
That's the end of my knowledge. I don't think I can do it. That's it. I quit. I'm cashing out now.
Yeah, the other ones I think are a bit less known, maybe. We've got Despicable Me 2 Collector's Edition figurines, which apparently Despicable Me is fucking huge. I don't know if you knew that.
I did. My niece saw the movie and loved it.
I don't even know what it's about.
I have no idea. It's another one of the movies that they just churn out, and apparently they're all good, though.
Yeah. So then we've got Doc McStuffins Deluxe.
I've heard of that, too.
See, you're more in tune because you have a niece. Well, I do too, but I...
you generally avoid.
I'm a man of mystery. Sophia, the First Royal Talking Vanity, which sounds amazing. Flutterby Flying Fairy. Fuck that.
Is that a glowworm?
It's some kind of proto vibrator. For Real Friends Cuddles My Giggly Monkey Pet. That's a hell of a name. The Leap Pad, which is like the Tabio. Skylanders Swap Force, which, hey, there's our video game.
Nice.
There is video game representation.
All right.
The Uglies. Do you know what that is?
No. Is that like a garbage pail kid?
It's from Moose Toys. I don't know. Oh, it kind of looks like a hybrid Pug Boglin.
So like a Madball?
Yeah, it is.
I gotta look this up. It's a Madball, eh?
Yeah, it's...
Holy shit! It looks like a Madball! They're re-releasing Madballs!
Yeah, yeah. But it's a puppet. So it's kind of Boglin-Madball hybrid.
Oh, okay.
And then to close out the list, Ever After, High, Royal and Rebel Dolls, Who Cares, Lego Legends of Chima, The Lion, Cheetah, what? Who, whatever. Shimmer and Sparkle, Crazy Loom Bracelet Maker, and Crazy Cart from Razer, which I imagine is a scooter.
Okay.
I have one more story, but we'll save that to next week. I'll tease it. It fuses Avatar and slot machines. So get ready. Next week's Hot Off the Wire will reveal that monstrosity.
So it's a gigantic pocket pussy.
A blue one that pays out.
Wonder how that tastes.
Say you all got obliterated at the end of 2004. By way.
This is the Super Dumb Games time trial, where we come up with a nostalgic topic, say being molested by a distant uncle around Christmas 1987, and riff on it for 10 minutes. No holds barred. All bets are off. We're both in it to win it. And if you don't like it, make like a tree and get out of here.
And today's topic is me getting molested in the mid-80s. It's a bit heavy.
What was it like?
A bit obscure, esoteric.
How does it feel?
I mean, it was a wonderful experience. I felt like I really connected.
Still in touch with that uncle? I want to meet him.
So, when I say the topic, I'm going to throw 10 minutes on the clock, and we are just going to go fucking crazy. The idea is... It's a tangential conversation spurred by a particular topic related to games with a heavy dose of just pitiful nostalgia. So today's topic is, and this needs a little bit of clarification, but it is games non-digital that you played at school, excluding sports. So one of the coolest things I think about going to school and not being homeschooled and getting that experience is the kind of emergent culture that happens. And naturally, since play is so important, games generate and get designed within that culture. And I'm wondering, Chris, if there were things you played in school that you think might be unique to your school experience.
There were several games that were developed. One that first popped into my head was actually designed by an adult, so it might not quite qualify for this, but I think it's worth mentioning because it was awesome. We had a gym teacher when I was in third grade who designed an obstacle course that included the rope that hung down from the ceiling and all sorts of mats, and you couldn't touch the gym floor because that was lava. It was basically a hot lava game, but we called it Indiana Jones because it was totally more legit than any other hot lava game you played in your backyard.
The hot lava concept is fascinating because every kid naturally comes upon that premise on their own. You know, you're on a couch, carpet's hot lava. Every kid does that.
It's like ancient civilizations developing around the same time.
Yeah.
You just happen to pick up the same practices as the kids three blocks down who you've never had contact with. That tribe somehow transmits their game styles over to you or vice versa.
Yeah.
And you're able to articulate that when the tribes meet for the first time. When you're first old enough to go off of the block that you grew up on and you meet those kids and they're so feral,
yeah,
and strange looking.
It's like guiding your canoe down the Amazon River.
Right. You're Sigourney Weaver and this is, you know, the gorillas in the mist that you're encountering. And that first time you guys kind of come together and you go, what do you play? And then you tell them and they go, well, we play this. And it turns out that there's a lot of congruence between the two. That's why games like War, I mean, obviously that's a sort of a universal thing because we all sort of, that's passed down probably from, you know, whatever pop culture you're immersed in regardless. But the rules that are set up when you're playing War, for instance, are you just going to say, bang, bang, you're dead, that counts as a legit hit? Or do you have to run up to the person and tag them with your gun? Those sorts of rules get fleshed out based on how the two tribes are able to, you know, connect with one another.
I loved whenever you start a new game, one of the wonderful things about it is the initial rules explanation and negotiation of roles, responsibilities, and all that stuff. And there was always this tension because you knew shit was just going to go awful.
Right.
Especially with guns.
That porch over there is ghoul. That means I'm safe when I touch it.
Yeah.
No other porches in this neighborhood are safe, though. That one is safe.
But right there, as a kid, I'm thinking, does that mean, does my whole body have to cross a certain plane? Like, this is fucking football. Can I just...
Just the body part touching. That's all we need.
But... See, when you're a kid, none of that initially gets argued.
Right.
It all gets argued in the moment in a screaming match.
Yeah, because Derek, the asshole kid from the other tribe...
God damn it, Derek!
He tags you just as your pinky touches Ghoul, and he claims that the way that they've always played it is it's got to be your ass on Ghoul.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not safe.
It was always Derek and Tum Tum. Those two always causing trouble... So I was thinking, and this was something, this didn't emerge until junior high. And now that I work in education, I was thinking that this might have something to do with child development. But
is this when we played the ongoing game of D&D in school?
Oh my God, that's a whole other thing. I forgot about that.
It's a repressed memory, but it was real, folks.
Yeah.
That was some real shit.
We designed a LARP that crossed over into reality and changed the course of elections in the school. It was a Game of Thrones, people. We were in 8th or 9th grade, right?
8th grade.
And we designed a LARP with costumes, ranks. You know, it was all medieval influenced. It was pervasive throughout school, and it then bled over, and we started having battles and influencing school elections.
You'd be walking down the halls, and I would cast a spell on somebody, and they would have to take damage, and then report in that they took damage to whomever was in charge of them somehow. It was an incredible thing.
It was out of control. But what I was actually thinking of was, I don't know the appropriate term for it, but it was the football on the desk.
Where you made the triangle football? And then
yeah. I remember a period of my junior high life where that was life. Like it was, I think it coincided with the larger playing field afforded by science lab desks and the ability of some crafty motherfuckers to make just fucking perfect footballs. Like they would labor over these things like a jeweler in 18th century Austria or something, and they would present it to you and it just looked perfect.
And there was sometimes a division of labor where they were great at the folding, and then there was somebody else, another artisan, that they would hand it off to who would put the decoration on it via pen or marker to adorn it as if it's something to be admired. And it was called paper football. That's the only thing I can find on it.
But did you do that at all in elementary school?
Yes, we started it in elementary school, and it carried over into junior high. I remember starting it sometime around 5th grade, I believe.
See, but I was thinking that it developed so late, because it's a relatively simple game to play, but because it requires the crafting of the football, you need a relatively older kid to be able to do that.
Well, it's sort of like being taught how to tight roll your jeans. It's something that's passed down from an older sibling once you're ready.
Oh my God. My building manager tight rolls. It is extraordinary.
How high up does he go up the calf?
Oh, man, he's all in. It's above ankle, certainly. It's so brazen. He has the puffiest jeans. You know, they have to be Bugle Boy or Jordache or something. They are bright blue, giant jeans that he tight rolls at the bottom. He looks like a genie. Every day.
Do you think he ever played paper football or LARPed in school? Does he look like the type?
LARPing, no question. Yeah.
Despite all of this, I'm trying to think of another non-digital game that I may have played back in school that didn't involve tag, because I'm trying to go through the evolution of games, and you're right, there was definitely a lot of games began physical, then went on to requiring props or more intricate rules. In high school, there weren't any games that I can think of. At some point, do we grow out of those games, or are we too cool for those games?
Yeah, I think there's like a certain level of cool that... But we were also, at that point, playing Game Boys in class, brazenly.
Right, that's true.
It was pretty out of hand.
That's when gaming actually tested life out. It was no longer a test between you and your peers. It was more like, how do we break the rules of life?
Yeah.
And see what we can get away with.
Yeah, it was more about gaming the system rather than playing a certain game. So it was about, we are in this closed system. Where are the loopholes that can be exploited? Which is a gaming mentality in a lot of ways.
I recall one of my games that I would play was, how long can I go into a classroom that I'm not supposed to be in and just hang out before the teacher kicks me out of that class? So,
and that's it, folks.
Oh no,
10 minutes are up.
God, we'll have to save that for another time. Those are some good stories we got. And that's how the time trial works. You have a finite amount of time to explain yourself. This is just like being in a debate in the national platform.
The soapbox.
Mitt Romney versus Barack Obama.
Carpetbaggers.
Putin versus Lincoln.
Filibuster.
Gerrymandering all over your face.
Pork barrel. So we'd love to hear your games that you played. So write them into superdumbgames@gmail.com and you'll get potentially read in our next wildcard segment.
And don't tell us that the games you played involved sex, because there is no way that your baby dick was getting action before mine was.
And don't try to convince us you played the most dangerous game. Although I have a story about the most dangerous game.
Where you actually killed a human being while hunting?
I was hunted by a human being. Oh, God. An adult human being. We'll save that for a future episode. That's a little teaser. And I don't know if he had a weapon or not.
Well, outside of what kind of heat he was packing below his belt.
Anyway, that's the show. Holy fuck.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Next week, get set for Dream TV. As always, you can check us out at www.superdumbgames.com. We're on twitch.tv/superdumbgames if we ever get around to actually playing on that fucking thing.
Yeah.
We're on iTunes now, so be sure to subscribe there.
There's a button on the website on the left-hand side to subscribe. YouTube, Super Dumb Games. I mean, it's fucking Super Dumb Games everywhere. We're a media empire. Also follow Major Nelson on Twitter.